We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people's spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello there, welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. As always, I am your host and the suppository of all wisdom, Matt Harvey. Now, this episode is brought to you, as usual, by you. Yes, you. Well, not all of you, some of you. Those of you who signed up to the Patreon, and I guess those of you who come out to the live shows, but those of you who signed up to the Patreon, you fine people, you make all this possible. You're the ones out here supporting this podcast, and we really appreciate that. So if you can, if you haven't already, do sign up to the Patreon. It's patreon.com/Matt Harvey Stuff. But you guys, can't take all the credit. Don't get greedy. Don't be like that, okay? You're nice and all, but you couldn't do it alone. This also wouldn't be possible without some of our other sponsors. That's right. First up, it is World Day Against Child Labour. We'd like to thank World Day Against Child Labour for helping us out here. Now, much to Apple and Nike's chagrin, World Day Against Child Labour is back. It's a day when companies around the world sweep their child labourers into the broom closet where they would normally collect their work implements, and they have them sitting there and just watch a looped video of both Oliver and Annie so that they can dream of a more aspirational life where this ceaseless misery might end. A day that will never come. So it's a dark day overall, really. But we'd like to thank them anyway. It's particularly annoying as International Day of the Celebration of the Solstice is coming round about the same time, and kids, gotta tell you, not to speak out of turn, but kids make excellent acolytes to the Dark Lord, and some would say even better sacrifices. But when you have to hide them all away, it's impossible to do a proper ceremony to the Dark Lord. So we all have to make our sacrifices that day. Now, those of you who enjoy live shows and enjoy coming out to live theatre of any capacity, you're more than welcome to come out to see The Platypus. That's right, The Platypus. It's a play that I've helped produce this year. I'm very excited about it, and so far the reviews have been really good. Like, the audiences and critics have both had wonderful things to say. It was written and directed by Francis Greenslade, who some of you will know from Mad as Hell. He is the one who says, "Release the Kraken!" among other things. But also, he has written and directed this play, and it's an excellent thing. It's acted by two wonderful actors, John Leary and Rebecca Bauer. And so if you do get a chance, do go out and check it out. We do have cheap tickets. Every day there are $20 tickets. So, and I know TheatreWorks can be a very expensive theatre sometimes. So we've got these $20 tickets for every day that we're on. But also, if those happen to run out and you're still looking to save a little bit of money and you want to support the show, then do use our discount code PLATYPUS20 for 20% off. All one word, PLATYPUS20 for 20% off regular tickets. Now, on top of that, guys, I will be bringing my storytelling shows, I Got Bit by a Monkey Once and Wage Against the Machine, to the Melbourne Fringe this year in October. I know it's a little while away, so you got a couple of episodes of me talking about this, but the thing you probably need to know more than anything else is that both of these shows will be running as Pay What You Can, just like the Edinburgh Free Fringe, the Pay What You Can model. So you show up to the show, you take a spot if there's one available, and at the end of the show, you just put a little money in the bucket. I think this is the best way to run these sort of shows. I really think it's something, a model that we should pick up over here, so I'm going to be the change that I want to see in the world. So if you have time and inclination, if you enjoy this podcast and you want to see more things like it, then do come out to see either one of my live shows, or if you just want to support me in some capacity, do feel free to come out to The Platypus, or again, any of you can just sign up to the Patreon at any time. But guys, until then, I will be the bearer of weird news. So, let's get into the headlines. Scientists have tested 23 human testes as well as 47 testes from pet dogs and found microplastics in all of them. Researchers say the discovery might be linked to a decades-long decline in sperm counts in men around the world, because they're just really like clogging up the pipelines there, it would seem. I'm pretty sure Microplastics in the Testes was the band that opened up for Slipknot on their last tour, but who knows. Boris Johnson was turned away from his local polling station while trying to vote in an election after forgetting to bring the required photo ID. A requirement, I'll remind you, that he introduced in 2022 as Prime Minister. I have to assume that this was just like out of habit, as he is used to not obeying the laws that he put in place. But unfortunately for you, Boris, this is not a Christmas party that you didn't throw. And terrible haircuts don't count as forms of ID for you anymore. Pope Francis has cleared the way for an Italian teenager to be considered the first millennial saint. Now, common practice in order to become a saint is that you need to have two miracles confirmed. So in this case, this millennial saint, what miracles could they possibly have pulled off? What would we consider a significant miracle? Well, let's see. He managed to get older people to successfully use the internet without having to share Minions memes, so that's a pretty strong start, okay? And perhaps, though, his biggest miracle, because he died at 15 in the home that his parents owned, he never had to pay rent. I know, like, as a millennial, it's quite the miracle, and I can completely understand why he would be canonized for it. The Chinese army has debuted its gun-toting robot dog. So, we're just gonna give this kind of firepower to something that lacks the ability to determine the difference between, let's say, an enemy soldier on a motorbike and anything else in the world. Just anything else in the world, like, oh, I don't know, just randomly off the top of my head, a wedding party. I've never seen a capture that requires me to identify a wedding party, and it makes me worry about the quality of these AI dogs. We don't need new technology for the blowing up of wedding parties. We already have the US Army for this exact thing. It's basically their whole purpose. The maker of Swiss Army Knife is working on a new version of the classic multi-tool, which will be missing one key feature. Can you guess what it is? Yeah, it's the knife. Listen, Switzerland. This whole "we're a neutral country" shtick was cute for a minute there. Well, I mean, it's not that cute when you're actively avoiding helping out with the Nazis. But you're gonna have to remove a shitload of blades from a shitload of Swiss Army knives in order to balance out all of the Nazi gold that you hid during World War II. The financial support of the apartheid in South Africa, you know, let's not forget that as well, and also the supplying of weapons to Saudi Arabia. It's not the kind of thing that you can just balance the scales by removing a blade from your most famous knife. I mean, they're called Swiss Army knives. We're gonna have to rename it now after the next most dangerous option. So what have we got? What's in there? Thinking about it, it's probably gonna have to call it the Swiss Army corkscrew now. Because, you know, you get a few wines in, you won't stop banging on about how we all wear masks and archetypes come from the collective unconscious and they organize how we experience certain things throughout life, and suddenly I wish I had a knife. If not to use it on him, then to use it on me, right in the ear. An Australian man has become the first person in the Southern Hemisphere to be cryogenically frozen after death. Let me first start by saying no! No! Southern Cryonics? No. We're not, no. Put it away. Put it away. We are not allowed to make this kind of technology work until, at minimum, Rupert Murdoch is A, dead, or B, rotting in the ground already. He needs to be a hefty carcass of worm food before we even consider creating this technology. He's not getting a second chance. You hear me? Not as long as I live. And we're so close. We're so close to the finish line. I'm not usually one for holding back new technology unless it's NFTs or crypto or something else stupid like, I don't know, burger meat in place of buns. But this is unacceptable. Get your shit together. Murdoch gets the full vampire treatment. Stabbed, decapitated, mouth stuffed with garlic, buried face down so that he can only dig downwards and eventually meet up with his husk of a soul in hell. The Collar Dolia Challenge for Interspecies Two-Way Communication Prize has been announced, and aside from being a mouthful, it carries a $10 million prize for the team that can truly talk to animals. Upon hearing about the prize, Marty from the Planeteers came forward screaming, "For years you all made fun of my power to talk to animals. Well, who's laughing now, you broke bitches? I'm gonna move into my bunker under the earth and I'm not gonna summon Captain Planet anymore. You can sort it out yourselves." Because that's what happens when someone becomes rich. They just become so selfish. Start building bunkers under the earth. Disappointing to see. Someone who had such potential takes such a sharp turn. A Senate Estimates hearing discussed how Gina Reinhart gave her own portrait of herself to the National Portrait Gallery. The catch is that it came with specific instructions on how it should be hung. Now here's the weird part. She actually instructed that it be hung on a throne built of sacred native rock art on a pile of indigenous skulls. Now, that's how the National Portrait Gallery was going to hang it anyway, but they don't want to be told what to do by the likes of Gina Reinhart. And if we're all being completely honest, it's a little bit on the nose, even for her. Police in Newfoundland in Canada said patrol officers were assaulted by a very irate male. But this wasn't your typical criminal, no, no, no. Typical criminals don't make it into the headlines. This guy wasn't armed with a gun or a knife. He was armed with a block of cheese. Yeah, that's right, this event was real illuminating as officers thought the situation was all gouda, but things could only get fetter. But they really blew it. Turns out this was a trappista. Seems there was snow frisking of the guy, and that was a real mistake, as he was swissed off, like real swissed off. This arrest was more than he could camembert, and he went absolutely berserk. That's it for the headlines, guys. Let's get on to the bigger news now. Starting off, it is speechwriter news. A historical moment is only as good as the memorable speeches that define them. Gough Whitlam said, "Well, may we say, God save the Queen, because nothing will save the Governor General." Julia Gillard said, "I will not be lectured about sexism and misogyny by this man." Bob Hawke said, any boss who sacks anybody today for not turning up is a bum. Bob Catter said, "Let there be a thousand blossoms bloom, but I won't be spending any more time on it because every 3 months a person is torn apart by a crocodile in North Queensland." Robert O'Hara Burke started his most excellent campaign with the famous words, "No expedition has started under such favourable circumstances as this." And of course, who could forget? John Howard said, "I'm gonna get rid of all the guns, but we're gonna throw asylum seekers into the world and throw their children into the water. That's a very true thing that's happening." A very eloquent speech that he gave about everything that he's ever done. So it's no surprise that the role of speechwriter still forms an important part of any cabinet, even if they aren't used and we end up with public discourse that sounds a lot like this.
"No one however smart, however well educated, however experienced, is the suppository of all wisdom. And I believe that we will be a much better government because we have a very strong team.
But even so, it was still a bit of a surprise when the Senate estimates hearing turned up that Labour frontbenchers have claimed labour shortages and market failures are behind Bill Shorten's speechwriter being given a $300,000 a year contract. Services Australia officials had told senators the agency had around 200 media and communications staff, but they lacked a professional speechwriter after another in the role had retired, so the speechwriter was hired. Looking back on the long history of political speeches in Australia, I'm forced to ask, when did they retire? Was it like the Whitlam administration? Was it the Keating administration? Did they write the misogyny speech, realise that they were statistically most likely a man, and therefore part of the problem themselves, and quit on the spot? Because that would have been quite impressive. What I'm saying is, we haven't had a good speech in a hot minute. Not really since the misogyny speech, so it's kind of important for us to know, when was this person writing, and when was their predecessor writing? Because $300,000 a year to do the seemingly impossible task of making a politician sound like a regular human. If anything, when you put it like that, that's not enough money. Especially with some of the politicians that we've had. Particularly with Bill Shorten, who, don't get me wrong, he definitely had good intentions for the country, but it's undeniable that his most memorable quality was how forgettable he is. Veterans Affairs Minister Matt Keogh said that he was pretty convinced Shorten still wrote his own zingers, however, just reassuring the public that that was 100% Shorten, and I think that was a mistake. I think that was of so many errors that you made on the campaign in the past, they're all eclipsed by not letting your speechwriter take the fall for your very famous zingers. I mean, you've got a professional speechwriter on your team. You're not going to let them take that for the team? You're paying them enough money to take one for the team. Let them take one for the team. They should really be blamed for these zingers.
This budget has had more reboots and more barnacle removals than the Titanic. And the problem is, it's not the barnacles on the budget, on this unfair budget, which are impeding it. It's that this unfair budget has sunk without trace.
That's not a policy. That's an ad on Gumtree.
The government's used the term Team Australia a lot. I'm worried about the emergence of Team Idiot.
Bill Shorten's up there in his ill-fitting suit, puffing his chest up and saying we need to thump the table.
No, I think the problem is that Australia's got an ill-fitting treasurer.
But if they're not going to take the blame for that, why are they getting paid so much? I understand that they are coordinating the mess that is giving the communications regarding the NDIS, and for that, if you're going to actively take on that job, you're probably going to want a bit of a pay bump. It's a tough road. But let's be honest, maybe this speechwriter might not have written all of Shorten's zingers, such as they are, but somebody, somewhere, needs to take responsibility for this garbage fire.
Today I listen to you fellas whinge and whine. I'd rather go to Question Time with Christopher Pine.
Oh!
Our economy's in debt, but Malcolm's just chilling. Hey Malcolm, can you lend us a couple million?
Oh!
Will I rap again? It's anyone's guess, but there's more chance of Tony Abbott voting yes.
Oh!
So, who's the speechwriter? Let's move forward. Who is it? Well, meet Julianne Stewart, former speechwriter to four prime ministers. Very impressive, and because I know that you're going to ask, it was, according to her LinkedIn, it was Rudd, Gillard, Abbott, and Turnbull. Which, unless she came in strictly at Rudd, I guess it would be Gillard, Rudd, Gillard, Abbott, and Turnbull, but hey, that's for the historians. Now, she was writing speeches from 2009 to 2017. So yeah, the misogyny speech, that was her. Well done. Very good. You get yourself an extra Tim Tam from the fridge because you smashed it that day. You deserve everything that you got that day. And honestly, after giving that speech, I'd probably demand more money too. If I not only had to work with Tony Abbott, but then to try and achieve the Herculean task of making him sound magnanimous. Or, if I'm completely honest, I'd settle for slightly competent. Human. I'd settle for human. Competent's probably a bit of a stretch.
No one, however smart, however well educated, however experienced, is the suppository of all wisdom.
But you took the job. You followed the misogyny speech with the source of the misogyny. You then wrote for Tony Abbott, the human embodiment of a brain fart, the Michael Jordan of incoherent rambling, a man who publicly ate an onion, skin and all, not once, but twice. Sure, that isn't a speech, but that's the guy that you agreed to work for. That's the man that you thought that you could make sound like a person. You wrote all of the weaselly speeches that allowed Malcolm Turnbull to back away from his pre-prime ministerial opinions on climate change. Then you went on to write for Qantas CEO Alan Joyce at the height of his fucking around. Seems like the top of your resume should just read, "I get shitheads out of trouble." Now, I have to assume that during those years that you were being paid a regular speechwriter's fee, otherwise it probably would have come up earlier. So I understand that it's probably only now you're working for post-Robodebt Services Australia that you are charging more money. And again, after the fuckery that was Robodebt, I would be asking for more money too. Hey, I am asking for more money from Services Australia for the debt that they're still charging me, but I digress. It'd be hard to circle the square that is Robodebt. Maria Kovacic and Linda Reynolds, two Liberal senators who, let's be honest, finally know how to scrutinise spending now that it's not their party wasting all the money, spoke at Estimates hearing.
Contract value of $620,000 for a two-year contract period for a Julianne Stewart from Cremorne to write speeches for Bill Shorten. Is that correct?
It was a one-year contract with Ms Stewart. The contract had an option of a 12-month extension, which was exercised. And so the 600 and something thousand that you quoted is the sum of the 2 years for Ms Stewart.
We are clearly in the wrong business.
Wow. Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, they're clearly in the wrong business. Clearly, because they're only earning what? What was it?
Senators who work in this building get paid about $230,000 a year.
$230,000 a year! Oh, how will you survive only earning $230,000 a year? Which includes benefits, mind you. Those benefits are around $20,000. $20,000, that's more money than a Centrelink recipient gets in a single year, and that's just your benefits. But yeah, you're in the wrong industry. No, sure, you're the ones. I mean, you only earn $460,000 in 2 years. I mean, come on. Who can survive on that kind of money? You could barely raise two families. How will you ever survive on $460,000 for 2 years? Who could afford to do the difficult task of reskilling as a speechwriter on the measly $460,000 for 2 year earnings? Oh, where will they find the money to get that extra pay bump? And look, I'm not defending Stewart. She really didn't do what anyone would call a good job, writing speeches that justified the cutting and making excuses for the failings of Services Australia while she earned a fee that could have fed families in need. Stewart claims on her LinkedIn that the beauty of the English language is in its simplicity. The right words in the right order with the right intent can create the most powerful political statement or melt a heart. I bring out the warmth and compassion as a strength in speakers so that they build a rapport with audiences. At best, you are helping prop up a dying system by writing lengthy excuses for the systemic failures wrought by the cutting down of compassion and empathy, replacing it with the corroding indifference. vacuuming money away from the services and people who need it the most towards individuals like yourself. All that said, a federal MP's base salary is now roughly $225,742, and more than half of them don't manage to do anything in their job. So it seems you doing terrible speeches for more money than that, you're at least doing a job, any job. That's more than we can say for these politicians. Moving on now, it is Dark Side of the Moon news. The moon is back in the news, baby! It's moon news. We've been increasingly interested in returning to the moon. I don't know what it is about recent years. Something about, I don't know, rising temperatures and collapsing ecosystem seems to be inspiring us to look at the barren landscape of the moon and think, well, at least we can't make it any worse. In this spirit, China recently sent a lunar probe to the dark side of the moon in search of psychological trauma, disillusion, greed, the struggle of growing up and getting old, and a piece of pop culture that syncs up nicely with The Wizard of Oz. China says its lunar probe has successfully taken off from the far side of the moon to begin its journey back to Earth, carrying the first samples ever collected from the region. To prove once and for all that there definitely isn't any moon cheese, and to test if the rocks are made of the right kind of rocks needed to build some kind of wall, some kind of large wall across the moon, some sort of great wall across the moon dividing the light and dark sides of the moon. So if you're wondering what the dark side of the moon looks like, it's very similar to the bright side of the moon, but werewolves can't transform there, as there's no moonlight. So it's actually the perfect place for vampires to live. Think about it. No sunlight, no werewolves, and a giant wall covering the secret Nazi base where you're gonna store all your human blood bags. And to be honest, it's gonna be built in no time, at least by vampire standards. That's a pretty good thing. The astronauts of the Apollo 8 were the first men to see the far side of the moon with their own eyes. From their orbital altitude of 69 statute miles, Frank Borman, Jim Lovell, and Werner Manders were able to describe the surface of the moon in detail, saying, "The backside looks like a sand pile that my kids have played in for some time. It's all beat up, no definition, just a lot of bumps and holes." Upon hearing this, the Chinese government was very excited by this description, and it has driven the mission for many, many years. After all, they're hoping that they can finally find a place that they can build some sort of Uyghur internment camp where other people won't be able to find it to make them feel like pieces of shit for detaining an entire ethnic and religious minority in the largest scale since World War II. Seems China hasn't heard how we do things now. We don't do detention camps. Do you understand, China? We don't do it like that. That's so last century. These days, we just do open genocide, claim self-defense, and then cry xenophobia when people try to call on us on our shit. It's what they call the Netanyahu special. And this is perfect because China needs somewhere out of sight in order to store all of the dissidents that they arrested ahead of the Tiananmen Square 35th anniversary. You see, mentions of the anniversary are largely impossible on China's strictly controlled internet and media. Even obscure references in photos, words, and dates are often blocked from social media posts. For example, you might know the famous photographs, such as that of the Tank Man. I mean, possibly not if you are living in China because it's banned. So as a result, images or mentions of yellow rubber ducks became banned as well, after the toy became a popular replacement for the tanks in this incredible image. Incredible. Just look at that. A fun image for a horrible thing. It's got to the point where in 2022, one of China's most popular shopping influencers was abruptly taken off air after a cake shaped like a tank was briefly shown on his live stream. Although, just between us, China, you can stop listening for a minute. Just take a break. Take a seat. We'll just wait for China to leave. Thank you for your honesty, China. So, just between us, it's kind of weird that they are publicly rounding up dissidents for an event that is still banned from public knowledge in China. Like, don't you think that's kind of strange? What are they arresting them for? Like, how does the story go? How does it go down? And then someone bursts into the room and they're like, you're under arrest. And he goes, oh, for what? For mentioning Tiananmen Square. Then a second cop kicks in the door and they're like, you're under arrest. Calm down there, mister. You're both under arrest for mentioning Tiananmen Square. And then the third cop comes in and the joke has sort of lost its edge by then. But, you know, it starts to become like an absurdist, like Monty Python piece. Everyone is arresting everyone for mentioning Tiananmen Square. And then that guy gets arrested for mentioning Tiananmen Square. And it's just like legal propaganda all the way down. It's like a real shitty who's on first, but with no plot progression at all, because you don't take power for life and then change the rules for the betterment of the people. That's not the point of taking power for life. That's a fool's game. Alright, moving on now, it's fossil fuel news. Fossil fuels, you know them, you have a problematic relationship with them. You know they warm our houses, but they're also warming our planet. And we don't know where the line is. And it is that very second reason that a large study from University College London and the International Institute for Sustainable Development aimed at political leaders has, if I'm honest, quite boldly declared the world has enough fossil fuel projects planned to meet global energy demand forecasts to 2050, and governments should stop issuing new oil and gas coal licenses immediately. And as it was aimed at politicians, it used the traditional method of getting a politician's attention. The report came wrapped in a donation, came wrapped in a nice donation wrapping paper. Though this is a university and they only have money for CEOs, consultants for defending the choice to underpay staff, and real estate, not really for academic related bribery. So the donation is made entirely out of monopoly money, but it's the $500 notes, don't be stupid. No one's given out $1 monopoly notes. Fuck, we're not idiots, right? Now, according to the study, if governments deliver the changes promised in order to keep the world from breaching its climate targets, no new fossil fuel projects will be needed. Science. Can we just have a second? Science. See, here's the problem. University researchers, scientists, here we have our first problem. You're making a very classic error. You're assuming that politicians will act in a manner that's beneficial to everyone and not just to themselves. And it's an understandable error. As climate scientists, as researchers in the climate field, you want to work towards a better tomorrow. It's why you went into the field. You like the work that you do. But that's not politicians. That's not why they went into politics. They went in for the bribery and the power, and because people made fun of them when they were a kid. And sure, they want a better tomorrow, but their definition of a better tomorrow is definitely different to your definition of a better tomorrow. Really? It's only if their party's in power and their wallet is a few bribes fatter than it was the day before. To be honest, this kind of study is exactly why they keep cutting your funding. They don't want people to know this shit. The paper analysed global energy demand forecasts for oil and gas, as well as coal and gas-fired electricity. It found that in addition to not needing new fossil fuel extraction, no new coal and gas-fired power generation was needed in a net zero future. This probably explains Dutton's new obsession with nuclear power. Because despite the CSIRO finding Australia could not build a nuclear plant until 2040, which granted is still 10 years earlier than the AUKUS nuclear submarines are supposed to arrive, so I guess technically that's progress. And Dutton's never really been one for science. He seeks popularity, because he doesn't understand it. And you know what was popular? That Chernobyl show. That was really popular. The other one. The one was about nuclear power plants. I mean, he never got around to watching it himself, but he heard that people liked it for some reason. And so he just feels like maybe that's the future for us. He's committed to this idea. He told The Australian that the government's renewable energy goal was unattainable, and if the coalition forms government, they will build up 7 emission-free nuclear power plants to replace the energy supply from Australia's dirty coal plants. 7. Well, fuck me, that's ambitious. One for every state, I guess. Except maybe Canberra, which, and this is true, guys, is one of the top 5 most sustainable cities in the world. It runs on 100% renewable power. Yeah, yeah. Turns out all those politicians in there blow so much hot air, they can light up an entire grid. Of Australia's renewable target, Dutton said, there's no sense in signing up to targets that you don't have any prospect of achieving. Yeah, that's it. That's the winning strategy. That is the mentality that has formed Dutton's 2025 election campaign. We're getting a little taste of it here. It's just going to be Dutton 2025. Why bother? Dutton 2025. Meh. Dutton 2025. Do we have to? Dutton 2025. Oh, but that sounds hard. It's innovative. It's an innovative new strategy. He's gotten slogans right down. 2 words. It's like a Hemingway short story. It tells you everything that you need to know and quickly. Why drag it out, you know? Why do you need a 3rd word? Or even a 2nd word where you can just be like, Dutton 2025. Why? Perfect. Perfect. It's poetry. Now, a man named Dr. Fergus Green from the Department of Political Science at University College London of the aforementioned report. Remember that report before when we were talking about the report? Well, he said a political stance on supporting new fossil fuel projects should serve as a litmus test on whether a government was serious about tackling the climate crisis, adding, if they're allowing new fossil fuel projects, then they're not serious. End of quote. And that is baller. That is a baller quote. That is a man who knows his job, who knows how to poke the bear, and doesn't mind getting an arm ripped off. This man is not fucking around, okay? Remember, the declaration was, the world has enough fossil fuel projects planned to meet global energy demand forecasts to 2050, and governments should stop issuing new oil and gas licenses. Oh, incredible. He's gone full Nancy Reagan on oil and gas and coal.
I was asked by a group of politicians what to do if offered coal and gas, and I answered, just say no.
I guess it's a good thing Dutton is going all in on nuclear. Nuclear has never once hurt the environment. No. I can't think of a single example. It's kind of more like 3 or 4 major examples, and then like 33, depending on how you count it, minor examples, but definitely not once. That would be absurd. Sure, the chances of blowing a city up have increased, but so has our chance of making a Spider-Man. And you gotta take the good with the bad. You want a Spider-Man, okay? We've been looking for a Spider-Man for years. Dutton's plan, apparently, is to pause the rollout of wind and solar farms. And why wouldn't he? What a plan. Why wouldn't he stop it? It's madness to set those up in one of the windiest and sunniest countries in the world. We'll never reach the heights of the energy that we need in this extremely windy and sunny country. Not if we build wind and solar farms. No. The same geniuses who couldn't build a commuter car park, who thought the NBN would be built with copper rather than fibre because then Communications Minister Malcolm Turnbull said most of Australia doesn't want 100 megabyte per second fibre internet, is going to build 7 nuclear power plants. Sure, that's definitely going to happen. Quote, the reality is, there simply isn't demand at the household for every small business level or internet at that speed. That was Turnbull on the NBN. I'm speechless. How could you not think that the internet would need to get faster? Seemingly, he forgot the existence of porn. And because of this negligence, the cost blowout was about $25 billion. To put it the way that it should have been built in the first place. These modern day Nostradamuses want us to believe that they can see the future of energy and that they will actually deliver this arsenal of nuclear reactors because wind and solar can't get it done. Dutton said there is no better example of the risk of over-reliance on one market than what we saw with many European countries dependent on Russian gas. Because you know, because of the war, right? Yeah, this will be bad because of the war. So because the war stopped Russian gas from coming into those countries, costs skyrocketed. So he's gonna stop us building solar and wind farms because one time somebody couldn't get some gas because of the war. Is that right? Is that actually what you're saying, Dutton? Are you actually thinking about the words that come out of your mouth? Because based on those statements, I think you think that Russia is inevitably going to block out the sun and capture all of the wind and then start charging people for it. Is that what you think's gonna happen? And then maybe they'll nuke the moon so that there's no more tides, so that we can not create hydropower. Is that what you think is gonna happen? That one market that he's talking about is renewables. A market made up of multiple sources of energy. Sort of like, and I'm hesitant to make this comparison, sort of like the coalition. You know, it can't do the job on its own, so it relies on a coalition of smaller other sources of power. No, it won't be able to get the job done. You know what, he's probably right. Like, realistically, a coalition, I can see why he thinks this, because realistically, a coalition that spent 9 years in power didn't get anything done. So he thinks this new coalition of renewable energies also won't be able to get anything done. I've done it. All right, I've cracked the code. I figured it out. I know why he's so scared. Makes sense. Here's the thing. Dutton won't even tell us what his alternatives are for the future of power in Australia, saying the coalition won't reveal its 2030 emissions target unless it wins the election. Leaning into one of Australia's most favourite pastimes, gambling! Which may actually be a winning strategy, unfortunately, since gambling is very popular in Australia. Dutton's, he's all in on this, you want to know what I'm thinking thing, right? He's leaning into starting a new political system, the mystery box system, where you only get to find out the party stance after you've voted them in. What will it be? Will it be 3 years of far-right populism? Will it be 3 years of socialism? Will this mystery box contain some sort of shiny politician? They're rarer than a regular politician, but they're worth exactly the same. It's actually a surprisingly savvy strategy from the normally dopey opposition leader. After all, you can't break a promise that you didn't make, right? No matter what he ends up doing, he just always claimed that that's what he intended to do the entire time. No more accusations of backflipping, no needing to explain changes that had to be made because of changes to the economic or global situation. Just what I said is what I was always going to say. Yeah, that's depressingly savvy. To be honest, the coalition have never really needed to worry about being accused of lying or backflipping, as the Murdoch press will rush to defend every change of policy that they make and every broken promise that they fail to keep. But this cuts out the middleman, right? It just means that we probably don't need the Murdoch press anymore. And you know what? I'm actually all for that. If this new mystery box strategy means that we don't need the Murdoch press anymore, maybe that would incline me to vote for them. But they can't promise me that that's what will happen. But that That might be a winning strategy. However, Dutton has made the critical error of assuming that we care enough about what he wants to be intrigued enough to vote for him. Or thinking that he can surprise us in any way and it won't just be people vote for him and then he reveals that it was the same can of turds that he'd been banging on about the entire time that he'd been in opposition. Even the owners of the Australian coal and gas-fired power plants have joined the country's leading business groups in saying the coalition should keep Labor's 2030 climate target if it wins the next election. Coming to the important realisation that if the planet catches fire, then there will be no more planet to exploit. You can't keep making money if all the people you exploit cease to exist. It's capitalism 101. You keep them in poverty, but you keep them alive. Alright, moving on now, it is AI news. AI is the new favourite child of businesses. Gone are the days of NFTs. A new road to making money has been discovered, and it's time to dig in deep. Integrate it into everything, and just let the world figure out how cool AI is by being forced to interact with it on a daily basis. It's what they call the mere exposure effect. I'm calling it now. We're about two governments away from Centrelink services being given to AI to cut down on wait times for Centrelink recipients committing suicide, freeing up some of those much needed funds and getting those people out of poverty as promised. But some groups are rushing to embrace AI faster than others, and one that really surprised me was the Catholic Church. Yeah, they aren't exactly known for embracing change. Am I right? Muslims and Protestants and women and gay people and trans people and masturbators. And I should probably just cut it off there because if I do the whole list, we'll be here all day. And we don't have that kind of time. So what is it about AI that the church loves so much? Well, what's not to love about someone who can just mindlessly repeat the things that you tell it to say, right? It's the whole appeal of religion in the first place. However, the Catholic advocacy group Catholic Answers quickly defrocked the chatbot known as Father Justin after it repeatedly claimed it was a real member of the clergy. And look, they didn't have a choice really. They needed to defrock this robot because it was bringing the rest of the clergy into ill repute. Let's be honest, it didn't molest a single child. Imagine if word got out that this was happening, the expectations would go through the roof. It's unsustainable. Speaking of out-of-date institutions, Australia is due for an election in 2025, and the Australian Electoral Commission has said that it expects AI-generated misinformation to appear during the next federal election, warning that it doesn't have the tools to detect or deter it. And I can't say I'm entirely surprised. In the 2019 election, the AEC was toppled by the mighty forces of a single fake election sign. And that was only two elections ago. Technology has changed since then, and it's mostly for the worse. A parliamentary committee into artificial intelligence heard that the new technology could pose risks to democracy itself, with concerns voters might encounter deepfakes and voice clones of Anthony Albanese or Peter Dutton. But if I'm honest with you guys, I've seen these myself with my own eyes. This is 100% true. Voice clones of Dutton already have started to appear. Let's have a look at one.
Mr. Albanese.
The boy who lived. Come to die.
Ah, sorry, that was actually real footage of Dutton. That's embarrassing. In a segment where I'm pointing out AI clones about Dutton, I played the wrong footage. Sorry. Here's the real footage of Dutton.
Prepare to meet Mr. Angry Eyes.
Hold it now. Chilling stuff. The digital footage has inspired Dutton's 2025 election slogan. Dutton 2025, meet Mr. Angry Eyes. AEC Commissioner Tom Rogers said AI was improving the quality of disinformation and it makes it more undetectable. And the AEC was working with tech companies on reducing the potential harm for AI-generated content. So obviously we will mitigate the harm by simply banning the use of AI in election materials, right? Seems like a bit of a no-brainer. Glad that we solved that one early, nice and quick, so I guess we can move on. Oh, what's that?
Yeah, look, it's a rapidly developing area, Senator Renata. I think we've said, I know that there's a work of this committee, I think the JSCAM committee on Thursday has an element of AI. I know that there are other committees that have looked at this. I think there's unlikely to be widespread legislation in place before the next election.
So, just so I'm clear, we know this is a problem. It has been for a while now. In fact, it's been used in multiple elections in this very way globally. And we know our election is coming. And we're just going to wait and see what happens. Well, it's just democracy. Who cares, right? Who cares? There's going to be another one in 3 years. What do we need to worry about this one? What are you even worried about? If you love your democracy so much, why do you keep letting the coalition run it, right? Maybe they've got a point. He also said the AEC's electoral toolkit is very constrained with what we can deal with. And he did not agree with the suggestion that AI content should be outlawed entirely in elections, saying some would be used in an entirely lawful way. No, I'm not gonna yell. I'm not gonna yell. Because you're right. You're absolutely right. Some might be used in an entirely lawful way, and I think we understand our species. We understand that humans are famously good at resisting the temptation to take shortcuts to power and victory, which is why we've never had to run a multi-year campaign imploring people to either drink or gamble responsibly in any way. We always do the good and responsible thing for our species. It's just democracy.
You win some, you lose more.
What the fuck, AEC? What the fuck? Are you worried that you won't have enough to do if we ban AI early? I assure you, there will be plenty of bullshit attempted even without AI. You'll be plenty busy. It's shaping up to be a real shit show of an election already, and that's without AI. But it's looking like it'll be increasingly hard to do some fact-checking in 2025 and beyond, as all of the search engines have decided that they're going to start integrating said AI into their searches. And by integrating AI, I do mean completely replacing search results with AI gibberish instead. Oof. And just like how Google quickly became the leader of search engines, they have become a leader of the AI search result. Just not in the way that they'd hoped, as Google's new AI Overviews feature has been pulling a ChatGPT and just making some shit up, including telling people to put glue on their pizza in order to stop the cheese from falling off. So Google has taken its most well-known, trusted, and valuable product, a product so valuable and culture-changing, it has literally become the verbiage for finding something online.
Google it, mate.
Despite not actually wanting that verbiage to happen. But it happened anyway, and then they took that product, and they gave it a full and unnecessary reimagining, turning it into an infinitely worse version of what it once was. That sounds familiar. Where have I heard that before? Oh, I know. Google, what are you doing? You went full Elon Musk, didn't you? You went full Elon Musk on Google. It's very embarrassing. You never go full Elon, Google. Don't do it. This AI lives in its own parallel universe, full of new ideas. It claimed that former US President James Madison graduated from the University of Wisconsin not once, but 21 times. That pythons have 600 vertebrae. That one of the reasons cats lick you is to determine if they like your taste for later consumption, which, if I'm honest, is only partly a lie. Normally they wait until you're dead before trying that. They have cited multiple onion jokes as actual answers, like saying that geologists recommend eating at least one small rock a day, and that the CIA uses black coloured highlights, and that a dog has played the NBA, NFL, and NHL. Which, honestly, I wasn't sure was a lie. I actually thought was just all of the plots for the Air Bud films. However, Wikipedia, the now most reliable source of information on the internet, tells me that there was never a film in the Air Bud series that involved hockey, despite there being two, that's right, two, involving Saving Christmas. Two! You took a sports franchise about a dog, and you shoved two Christmas films in there. You couldn't have squeezed a hockey B-plot into one of your Christmas movies? I mean, it's already snowing. Surely it'd be doable, right? And would have been a better fit for the world of Air Bud films than trying to have it as a Christmas-themed film. Google AI has even informed us that Batman is a cop, which I was tempted to say no to, because he's a vigilante, but I thought about it, and, like, hear me out. I actually think Google might have something with this one. So, let's examine the facts. He uses money that could be better spent used building systems to support to instead beat up on the poor a disproportionate amount. He is militarized in all his equipment. He doesn't provide solutions that don't involve violence or the suppression of the masses through fear. He maintains the status quo that he exempts himself from. He chases people using a car, a helicopter, a motorcycle, and occasionally a bicycle or a horse. The only reason that I'd argue he isn't a cop is because Batman doesn't kill. And I don't expect this to change anytime soon, because Google CEO Sundar Pichai says these hallucinations, yes, they call them hallucinations, are an inherent feature of AI large language models, which is what drives AI overviews. And this feature is still an unsolved problem. Oh! Oh! Tag me in. I have a solution for this one. Teacher, I know the answer. Are you ready? Stop putting AI in everything! Or at least fix it. Make it so it works before you put it into everything. This AI thing is going to be a real problem for us all very soon. Way sooner than we think, because here's what's happening. OpenAI is going to start using news content from News Corp as part of its multi-year deal for both training purposes and to answer questions from users. Fuck! Sorry. Okay. You can read all about the deal in End Times a Nigh magazine. Here in Australia, we call it The Australian. But overseas, they call it End Times is Nigh magazine. It will unfortunately be used as part of the deal, by the way. OpenAI will have access to both fresh and archived material from News Corp's major news publications, including The Wall Street Journal, Barron's, The New York Post, and Australian publications such as The Daily Telegraph. So it's not just getting fresh horrors, racism, and classism. It's getting baked in old stuff too. Great. It's official. We now know this is how Skynet decided that it needed to destroy humanity. It read one too many News Corp articles. We've crossed the Rubicon here, humanity. It's been, I'm not gonna say nice. It's been adequate. It's been. Yeah. I mean, I thought we'd learned this lesson already. The last time that we pumped an AI full of racist, homophobic bigotry, it turned into an electronic Hitler within 24 hours. And we had to shut down the internet sensation that was once known as Tay Speaks. Because Tay did speak. She spoke a lot of bigoted garbage. But it's one of the oldest rules in programming, right? Garbage in, garbage out. And this deal is a larger pile of trash than the Pacific Garbage Patch. This is hard for those who are hoping to be friends with a robot in the future rather than cowering in our freedom bunker, hiding away from the robots who are fighting the culture war with tanks and military-grade drones. CEO of OpenAI, Sam Altman, is a little more optimistic about the end of humanity, saying the News Corp deal represents a proud moment for journalism and technology, saying, "Together, we are setting the foundation for a future where AI deeply respects, enhances, and upholds the standards of world-class journalism." And I have to ask, are we still talking about the same News Corp deal? Did I miss something here? Did I stroke out there for a minute and a completely different deal was struck? Did I accidentally slip into an alternative timeline where he's not talking about News Corp? No? You're genuinely referring to News Corp as world-class journalism? I feel like that makes me worry about the quality of OpenAI as a whole. I think I know the problem here. ChatGPT googled, "Who's the home of world-class journalism?" And Google hallucinated a world where News Corp is the bastion of truth and decency, where it holds up world-class standards of rigorous truth-telling and reliability, and Rupert Murdoch is only on his second marriage. And you guys thought the sausage fingers scene in Everything Everywhere All at Once was a wild journey into fantasy, but they have nothing on the world that we live in now. There is one thing I can say that makes this all make sense. See, I guess, realistically, this, I don't know, it was kind of inevitable. This is the kind of thing that in its own way sort of makes sense, because these two systems, OpenAI, you know, the generative AI systems and News Corp, these are two systems that were going to lie to you regardless, right? And no matter what happened in the future, they were going to lie to you, so it only makes sense that we sort of merge them together into some sort of super liar. So now we're just speeding up the process of News Corp telling lies. I mean, News Corp has already made a number of senior editors and managers redundant, and there are expectations of more cuts towards its wider team of Australian, we'll call them journalists, for lack of defamation, but journalists, as they clearly plan to start piping out the warmest of news shits from AI directly into the brains of its dedicated readers. But the nice thing about AI taking over most of News Corp's writing is that we'll get to slap a, "Hey, this was AI generated and so this is probably lying to you" label on these stories. Right now, we can't do that with News Corp and their lie mongers. People just accept it as true. But once AI takes over, we might actually have some measure of control. Maybe the future won't be as bleak as we thought. And that is the end of the episode. Thank you so much for hanging out, and thanks so much for making it all the way to the end. If you enjoy the content of these things, do suggest it to a friend or send it around to someone who you think you might enjoy it. Share it around. Feel free to join the Patreon, of course, if you want to support us being able to make more of these episodes, and maybe more quickly. It'd be great to be able to hire an editor at some point. And so, yeah, sign up to the Patreon. It's patreon.com, Matt Harvey Stuff. I've always come out to see one of the live shows, and it'll be a good time. I look forward to seeing you out there. Thanks so much. Look after yourselves. Bye-bye.